Okay, great. All right, so we're taking a break. I actually have a question for you, Bill. Are you going to be doing the screen sharing?
I don't think so.
Okay, I've had a couple of people asking me about how to get access to the handouts.
Well, you can screen share if you want. We can try it. Or if they put it up in the PDF in the chat, maybe they can access it themselves.
I can have that ready for download here in just a minute. I mean, if somebody wants to be able to download it, but would that work for them, do you think?
I wanted to make sure it was okay with Bill.
Oh, try anything.
Okay.
Well, within reason.
Yeah, whatever you can do, Billy. Anybody have any questions, comments for Bill so far? Let me open up participants here. Okay. I'm gonna look around and see if anybody's waving their hands. Sometimes that works out better. I also noticed that the hands come up on people. Oh, I saw you. Question, but it was what you just referenced about the obedience to or compliance to the unenforceable. I always remembered it as obedience to the unenforceable. I can't remember exactly which piece of literature that's from.
Well, it's certainly in the traditions. It's in the beginning of the tradition discussion and path to recovery. It shows up other places. Tina read it from one of the daily readers today. It actually shows up.
It shows up a lot. So,
but Lois wrote it as part of, you know, she helped write. She was kind of lead writer of the Al-Anon traditions. And she wrote that as part of the introduction to the traditions, which is still, I know it's in Path to Recovery.
Okay.
I just think it's such a beautiful expression of.
Really?
Because, you know, we, as much as some of us would like to, we don't have AA police, we don't have Al-Anon police, and you can't enforce this stuff, and yet people comply voluntarily. It's just wonderful.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
It's emotional sobriety.
Mm-hmm. So I see, I'm thinking that your name is Noel. You're so animated.
Noel.
Hello. I'm asking you to unmute. Is it working? No, you're talking. Let me see. Hang on. We can't hear you. Can you unmute yourself?
There it goes. Now I'm unmuted.
Yeah. There you are. Hey, I see all kinds of reactions from you and faces.
Well, I used to teach emergency medicine, and I had this one slide that I would put up on the screen, and this is for Bill. Teacher, can I be excused? My brain is full. Is Bill even listening?
I'm wondering how hypothetical that is.
It's quite true. My brain really.
Well, this has been the hardest part.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything new in the next hour and a half. I'm just going to repeat stuff I've already said.
Well, that'll make it digest better.
But in your case, now I've had a chance to think about it. No, you cannot be excused.
Okay, thank you.
You're just going to have to learn to nap without me knowing it.
You know, that's another nice thing to know, that, you know, this is going to be repeated. I think that so many times I've been to meetings and I hear something and I'm like, oh my God, what was that? And it's like I want to capture it in a jar so I could keep it and hold it so I could.
I'll be right back.
Okay. He just stepped away. But, you know, so many times I want to just hold on to it. And, you know, a lot of these concepts are sort of like, you know, wisps in the wind, but they are repeated. They always come back. So it's nice to have faith that, you know, you just keep working your program and you're going to get back to it and it's going to be there. We have a little bit of time, especially since Bill just stepped away, for any other comments. Here, Margaret.
Oops, there we go. Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, you know, and thank Tina so much. You know, you just talked about the obedience to the unenforceable that's in past recovery. It's in a tradition four. And one of the things as I'll call it a straight Al-Anon, only Al-Anon, I'm not a dual member. I've been in Al-Anon, you know, for some considerable time. But one of the things is that always gets thrown up in the meetings, often by dual members, is, you know, there are no musts in Al-Anon. I literally cannot stand that statement at this point, just only because that's the thing that there's not an emotional understanding or a submission or surrender to obedience to the unenforceable. And I just open up the book literally and read out of it. I go, it's not personal. This is actually conference approved literature. And this is what it's asking us to do. And I just leave it at that. But I was wondering how he and others have handled that, you know, because it seems to be, there are no musts seems to be somewhat weaponized in meetings, but in the sense I've used as an argument to be able to do whatever they want, whether it's using bad language or changing or reading, you know, reading from, quoting from the big book and not conference approved literature and just all sorts of things. And I was wondering if anybody had any feedback on that and how they handle it.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, thank you, sir. Sorry, I didn't know if you'd gone off to the restroom or something, you know.
Margaret, I'm always watching. There's two issues. Number one, whoever says there are no musts, I do not know what book they're reading. There are musts. The word must, M-U-S-T, is in the big book hundreds of times. So that's a fact. You can like it or not like it. You can say you don't agree with it. But to say there are no musts in the problem is simply false in the program. Here's the other thing. And we've used this metaphor so often that it's become trite. Do I want the benefit promised in the big book or in how Al-Anon works or in Path to Recovery or in the 12 and 12? There are promises of a better life in every one of our books based on real life experience of the hundreds and thousands of people that the stories in those books are based on. Do I want those benefits? Yes, I do. Do I want to do the work they did to get those benefits? No, I don't. I want the benefit without the work. Here's the deal. If I really want the benefit, I must do the work. And I don't have any problem anymore with people who sit in meetings and say there's no must in the program. I know they don't know what they're talking about. And I forgive them for it. However, I do try to be sure if there's a newcomer listening, that I take the newcomer aside after the meeting and try to explain. I try, and I have to try, because it's very hard for me to explain this and not throw the other person under the bus. I try to explain to them where that person is coming from. They have some defiant strain left in them that just doesn't want to buy into the notion that surrender is real. Surrender, we're going to talk about that in about 7 minutes, but surrender is real. So whoever says there are no musts in the program, are not talking about the 12-step recovery program of AA and Al-Anon. They're talking about some program, but it's not the 12-step recovery program. I hope that answers your question.
Hey, Bill, somebody has asked if you could please repeat the 7 emotions that you
mentioned. Hey, again?
Can you please repeat the 7 emotions that you mentioned?
Well, the ones from the original Chinese?
I don't know. I thought that there were less with the original.
Well, that's why I was saying it was just a catalog of different people's approach. Can I repeat them? Yes, I can.
Thank you.
If I can find them. Here were the Chinese list. Keep in mind, anger and fear is in every one of these lists. That's the common denominator. The 7 ones from Confucius were joy, anger, sadness, fear, love, disliking, and liking. Paul Ekman said 6, happiness, sadness, fear, disgust, anger, and surprise. The Chinese fellows last year had down to 4.
Yeah, they were the
happiness, sadness, fear, and anger. What we're going to talk primarily about today is resentment, fear, and anger, because they're kind of at the root.
Okay.
We're going to find out, for example, that having a resentment pretty well guarantees you won't be happy.
Yeah. So I have somebody with their hand raised. Do we have time for one more person? Or?
Sure.
Okay. I've got Otis from Milwaukee here.
Otis! I didn't know Otis was here today. Where have you been hiding, brother?
I had to do some service and speak.
Hi,
what
Otis.
What I found so far in the big book, Bill, is 174 musts and 1 must not.
But
that's what I found so far.
But you're still counting.
I'm still looking.
All right, buddy. Did that help you out, Margaret? And thank you, Otis. Hey, this is a team effort.
Yeah.
We don't rehearse this stuff. God just throws it on the wall. Shall we resume, Patricia? You want to get going?
Do it. Yeah.
All right.
Well, here we go, everybody.
Here we go, everybody. Back on a roller coaster. How do we find emotional sobriety? That should be the question. Here was that sentence from the 12 and 12. Here we begin to practice all 12 steps of the program in our daily lives. Here we begin to practice all 12 steps of the program in our daily lives so that we and those about us may find emotional sobriety. That's in the 12 and 12, 1953. And in the 12 and 12, it also says on pages 106, 107, as a result of practicing all the steps, we have each found something called a spiritual awakening. The most important meaning of it is that he or she has now become able to do and feel and believe that which he could not do before on his unaided strength and resources alone. We have been granted a gift, a free gift. AA's manner of making ready, and I would suggest Al-Anon's manner of making ready to receive this gift, lies in the practice of the 12 steps. So we have this parallel happening as we are seeking to work the 12 steps and integrate them into our life and make them the framework of our life on a daily basis. In this search for spiritual awakening and continuous spiritual growth, as we're doing that work, we're going to find emotional sobriety along the way. It's just wonderful. So we're going to go into step one, but first I want to dispel 4 more myths. We've just dispelled 1, the myth about there are no musts in recovery, and I want to thank Margaret for that. Here's another one. I heard this from my first year of recovery. AA doesn't deal with feelings. I heard a man say it Thursday night, day before yesterday. I went to AA to get sober. I have to go to Al-Anon to learn to deal with my emotions. Good. Go to Al-Anon because God knows you need it, I said to myself. I did not say it out loud, Debbie. I was exercising restraint of tongue for once. Now my sponsor has heard me say it, so I'm good to go. AA doesn't deal with feelings. Didn't they read Dr. Jung? Rearrangement and displacement of ideas, attitudes, and emotions? Lord have mercy. Here's another myth. Bring the body and the mind will follow. Well, first off, picture that, will you? I mean, the metaphor, it's a Far Side cartoon. Here's a body walking in the room in a little wagon. He dragging a wagon behind you. Say, what's that you got in that wagon? It's my mind. I brought my body and my mind is going to follow. How's that work? Now, I understand what it means on some level. It's only partially true. In the beginning, I mean, I'm talking about those first few months. I woke up one day and realized I know nothing. Now, other people have known that for a long time, but I woke up one day. So I did start to get some rational thinking back, and I even became able to deal with my emotions. But I'm a little nervous with these shorthand things, and we do them in all the programs. If you know the steps and know the program, the shorthand is okay because you know what it's meaning. But if you're a newcomer and you think that's recovery, it's very dangerous. So be careful of that. How about this one? Don't drink. Go to meetings. Trust some kind of God. Help another drunk. You'll be fine. I'm not sure what program that is, but they must not have a big book. They must have a four-page pamphlet. They're a little more to recovery than that. And how about this? We don't care how you feel, just do it. I've said it. I've said that to people. Don't take a drink even if your ass falls off, and your ass is going to fall off. Okay, I've done it. I confess. Not very helpful in the long run, though. You know what I think the very worst thing? And I mean the very worst thing we can say to another human being, you shouldn't feel that way. Really. My cat just died. I'm heartbroken. Oh, you shouldn't feel that way. It's just a cat. Not only is that thoughtless and inconsiderate, it's downright cruel. The very worst thing I can say to another human being, you shouldn't feel that way. And with that, let's look at step one. Each of these steps I have rephrased a little bit for the sake of emotional sobriety. Here's step one. We admitted we were powerless, period. Let's start there. See, it doesn't matter so much what I'm powerless over. Because what I'm powerless over is not the problem. And I spent way too much time focusing on the over. I used to go to Al-Anon meeting and name my qualifiers, the three people that I thought brought me to Al-Anon. I came to find out my qualifiers tween my ears. Come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to talk about drinking and alcohol. They listened to that for about 3 weeks, and then they said, we've heard enough of your pitiful drunkologue. You weren't even that big a deal. We admitted we were powerless. We came to accept that our lives were unmanageable when we denied that we were powerless, in our case, beginning with alcohol. But I'm going to find out I'm powerless over my own emotions. If I'm not King Baby, I'm barely an adolescent. We see this in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called the Step One. It's primarily the doctor's opinion and Bill's story. Pages XXV in the doctor's opinion through page 16, which is the end of Bill's story in the big book. couple of quotes. Certainly I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. That was Bill, page 10, the beginning of Bill's first step. Certainly I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. And then into 12 and 12 on page 21 says this. Every natural instinct, he's talking about those desires for sex, material, and emotional security. Every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. Well, think back for a minute. And this is me, you may or may not relate. I was powerless over every feeling I feel. I still am powerless at first. In that first instant, I'm powerless over every feeling I feel. It happens. Until I learned how to feel the emotion. Just feel it. Admit that it's happening. Without acting on it right away, I will always be an emotional king or queen baby. Most people, circumstances, situations, institutions, and organizations rub me the wrong way then, and they still rub me the wrong way a lot today. I was powerless over my first emotion then. I'm pretty much powerless over it now. I was always going to be the baby with unmanageable emotions. I was barely an adolescent emotionally when I got here at age 40. You know what my two drivers were? And I've done lots of inventories. I'll tell you a little bit about those. But I was afraid of not getting my way. Growing up in an alcoholic home, certain amount of insecurity, became very self-reliant early on. I'm going to take care of my own material security. I'm going to take care of my own relationship security. And when I got old enough, I damn well started taking care of my sexual security. I didn't really date. I took hostages, looking back on it. I didn't care so much about how they were feeling. I was really into instant gratification in every area. I was afraid of not getting my way, so I got angry when I didn't get my way. I was afraid you would find out I was afraid, so I got more angry. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, the only feeling, the only emotion I could express was anger. Tina talked about us moving to Little Rock. I was 2.5 years sober when we got married, and we moved to Little Rock, and I was traveling a lot, and Tina went down and got a little puppy. Got literally the run of the litter, darling little dog. Turned out Freckles was with us for the next 17, 18 years. And as we got better, she got better. That was our recovery dog. But here I am in my own mind, a spiritual giant, 3 years sober, and I come home from a week-long business trip, tired, frustrated. People on the railroad were not behaving. And we had a rule in the house. I love the dog. The dog can have the run of the place. We were potty training her and all that, or house training her. But we had a rule, which means I had a rule. No dogs on the bed. I come home, walk in the bedroom, there's a little old freckled, cute little darling little cocker spaniel on the bed. Before I knew it, I had thrown the dog against the dresser. It was like a cartoon. You could watch the little dog in slow motion just slide down the dresser and hit the floor. Tina was in the bedroom at the time and witnessed this little anger episode. And she ran over, she picked up that poor little dog. As she's walking into the bathroom to close the door, she said to me, if you ever do that again, the dog and I are out of here. That was my emotional lack of sobriety, or lack of emotional sobriety at 3 years sober. I had serious anger issues. I did not get over that overnight. And then I read this the other day. I just want to throw this in here because I love it. I really was at my wit's end. My sponsor was also our vet. So I had to tell Robert about what I'd done with the damn dog, because I knew he's going to find out from Tina anyway. That was not a happy conversation. But I was at my wit's end, and I read the other day, you know what's good about being at your wit's end? That's where God's wisdom can begin in your life. Isn't that cute? I like it. Step two. We're still in the admitted, the AID, step one, two, and three is just admit my emotion. Don't have to understand it, don't have to like it, don't have to tell anybody else about it. Step two, came to believe. It's going to happen over time. And no matter what other people believe, this is me coming to believe about something about me. It doesn't matter if other people believe it. Came to believe for Bill, which is a form of admitted. Coming to believe is a form of admitted. Came to believe, admitted, that I needed help with my emotions. Stop right there. Certainly for alcoholics, probably for Al-Anons, probably for any other human being, particularly a rageaholic like I was, just admitting that I needed help, to me, is one of those big steps, the 5 miles out of the middle of the forest.
Didn't have one this morning.
I needed help with my emotions, and that there might be a power that could help me, capital P, and that power was not me. The most important thing about step two, in any program, in any phase of my recovery, emotional sobriety or otherwise, step two is not about God yet. No, it's not about God yet. We'll get to that maybe in step three, certainly by six and seven. Plenty of time to get to God. Step two is Bill is not God. There's a difference. I don't have a chance to develop a relationship with a power greater than me until I first, and here comes surrender, Margaret, until I first completely surrender the idea that I am God. Now, I've been at this 39 and a half years, and I've made a good beginning on step two. I have made a really good beginning, Marty, on step two. But there are still moments I think I should be able to control something. Or there are still moments when I think I know better. Or there are still moments when I say, what's this is happening and what's that happening? And I'm all upset about this. I'm in emotional turmoil again because this, that, and the other is happening. That's Bill playing God again. That's Bill defining right and wrong. That's Bill knowing what other people should and should not be doing. So this business of not playing God, believing there is a power greater than me and it's not named Bill, is turning out to be a lifetime coming to believe. There are three chapters in the Big Book, chapter two, chapter three, and chapter four, after the doctor's opinion and Bill's story. Chapter two happens to be titled, There is a Solution. Two-thirds of the chapter is about treating my denial that I'm God. Chapter two is primarily treating my denial that I'm not powerful enough and that I don't need help. Chapter three, called More About Alcoholism, primarily treats my defiance. Okay, I'm not God, but I still don't need help. Okay, I can't drink. I can handle it. Chapter three primarily begins to treat my defiance. And then chapter four, we agnostics, primarily treats my doubt that there is God and that the God can help me. Chapter two primarily treats my denial. Chapter three primarily treats my defiance. Chapter four primarily treats my doubt. All of those are designed to help me along came to believe. Because I'm not going to encounter God in the steps till page 62 and 63 in the Big Book in step three. And in terms of emotional sobriety, admitting that I need help with my emotions And I hope there's a power that can help me with that. And that power is not me. Is a long way toward getting the help. How many years have I dealt with my anger, my fear, my fear of unhappiness, my fear of being disappointed, which are my two oldest fears, without any help, without even admitting it to anybody. Admitted I needed help with my emotions. He says again, I said this before, page 52 in the big book, couldn't control our emotional natures, a prey to misery and depression. Yes, I was a victim. I was a victim when I got here of myself. I wasn't a victim of all those other people. Page 31. Belief meant reliance, not defiance. I can't reach reliance if I don't begin to surrender my defiance. Belief meant reliance, not defiance. It's not a light switch. I have to move. That's why there's a whole chapter. We agnostics, chapter 3 in the big book, just devoted to treating my defiance. I can't become reliant until I start moving away from defiance. It's a rheostat. It's not a light switch for most of us. I have to become willing to meet and transcend other pains. That's why it's called work. Why it's called working the program, working the steps. The beginning of the promises on page 83 of the big book, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, following step 9. For the promises on page 84. If we are painstaking, this is work. I am powerless over every feeling, every emotion when it first occurs. So my help, capital H, my help must be able to help me change how I admit, identify, and deal, AID, how I admit, identify, and deal with my feelings, my emotional AID. In my emotional recovery from permanent babyhood, narcissism, it's all about me, or adolescence, which is all about you not giving me my way, really. I come to believe that such help, capital H, I come to believe that such help is possible. That's all step 2 asks us to do. It might be true. It's a hope step. It's not a guarantee step. It happens over time. Come to believe. I come to believe such help is possible. Watch this. Watch this. I do not need to know how. At step 2, I'm at step 2. I do not need to know how the help is going to come. I do not need to know when the help is going to come. I don't even know what the help is going to look like. I am willing to hope that such a helping power, capital H, capital P, new use of HP, helping power. It's new to me. Maybe you've seen it before. God wrote it on my blackboard the other morning. No, helping power. Tina said, and I agree, my higher power really cares about me, knows about me, and is big enough to help me overcome anything in the world. If I don't believe that, I need to let God grow. But I'm not to God yet. I'm still getting me out of the way, so I'm not God. And if I'm not God, maybe I'll have hope that there is a God. I am willing to hope such a helping power is available to me. Coming to believe is learning to hope, not to know. Coming to believe is learning to hope. Have hope. if such helping power is available to me and I can learn to receive it. You know where my hope was born? I didn't know it then, and I didn't know it for a long time. My hope was born walking into that first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the ninth floor of the Power and Light building in downtown Kansas City on January 5th, 1981. And I heard that dope, that plagiarizer, Jim C., rearrangement and displacement of ideas, attitudes, and emotions. Gag me with a spoon, the California girls used to say. I didn't know how right it, God was speaking to me in my very first meeting through Jim C. I did not have hope when I came back, took that last drink, March 18th, came back to that home group, and they welcomed me back with open arms. They didn't shun me. They didn't dismiss me. They didn't disqualify me. You know what they said? This still makes me cry. We're glad to see you. Open arms.
Oh.
We understand. We understand. Billy, you're not, Billy, you're not muted. Thank you, Billy. We understand. I didn't have hope. You know what I had? I had borrowed hope. I borrowed their hope and didn't even know I was borrowing their hope. You don't have to know this stuff is happening to you for it to happen to you. Remember the last time you walked into a meeting? Remember when you clicked on here today? Remember when you clicked on this meeting an hour ago, 2 hours ago? For some of you, God bless you, it's 5 hours ago.
Oh.
Remember how you felt? Well, most of you. We don't know what that feeling is, but it's got a big ingredient and a hope. This is going to be good. This is going to be fun. This is going to be good for me. I may learn something. I may hear him say something that's going to make me feel so much better about me because I'm not the turkey he is. Whatever works for you. Coming to believe is learning to hope. You know what the very first sentence of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was the day they printed it and still is today? We're about 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Body includes emotions. Seemingly hopeless is what we're recovering from here. Seemingly hopeless. When Al-Anon says no problem too great, no power to work, disappointment too great, I'll have to get that out. It's also in the Big Book. I'll get it in a minute. It's in the beginning of a chapter to the wise. Borrowed hope. If you're new, if you're going through one of those times in recovery, you feel disconnected, you lost touch with the power, the helping power, the higher power, the God of your understanding, here's some hope. Take it. It's yours. I got a lot. I'm getting more right now. By letting me do this, you're feeding me. My sponsor was named Aaron. And I was a year sober in my second year sober. And Aaron happened to be city attorney of Kansas City at the time. And the newspaper headlines every morning started talking about Aaron W. They used the last name, of course. And they were accusing him of fraud, of conspiracy, of all kinds of really ugly, dirty stuff. And we'd see Aaron on Monday night, and we'd go to dinner, and we'd usually visit one more time during the week. And he was calm. He maintained his dignity. He was handling this with an unusual degree of peace. And I remember asking Aaron, it was 6 months into this thing, and he said, number one, I haven't done the things they accused me of doing. We're in a process that the truth will come out. And he said, I trust the process. I trust the people that are handling it. And I trust God that I'm going to be all right. I did not know then that I was watching an example of emotional sobriety in the face of public slander. Is a public figure, and I've never forgotten that example. To me, I was looking for examples to put with this, and it was the first thing that God laid on my mind. Aaron had emotions. He had all the emotions you can imagine during that time. But he had a recovery program that was sound. He had God. He had a helping power. Gave him hope and the strength to go through that and be a wonderful example to me and lots of other men. Step three, we're still in the admit. Made a decision, which by the way is to admit a desire. Made a decision, made a choice, chose that desire, admit that desire. I make a decision to seek God's help with my emotions. In the big book, it's pages 60 to 63, where you will find this bullet point of a sentence. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. Self will run riot. A riot is out of control, no restraint, no limitations. Page 62 of the big book says, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. It's emotions. But the moment our mental or emotional independence is in question, how differently we behave, that's in the 12 and 12, page 37. I thought it was offensive that people would tell me I needed help with my emotions, because in those days I thought having feelings was a weakness. Having to deal with my emotions was something for, you know, the nursing school. I've said before, I'll say it again, I am powerless over my first feeling. That very first emotion happens before I can think about it. I must accept the fact that I need help to grow up and out of adolescence. I need help to grow up and out of adolescence. Further, you know, it doesn't matter why I stayed in adolescence. I spent way too much time in the early years trying to figure out why. For the most part, if you're in science, why matters. If you're in engineering, why the bridge needs to be strong enough not to fall down matters. In the emotional, spiritual area, why is overrated. Because finding out why I'm still an adolescent at 40 doesn't change it. I'm powerless over my first feeling. I am powerless over the emotions such as resentment. We're going to see this in just a minute when we start on 4 and 5. Resentment gave me the illusion of power. That's why anger is so urgent and immediate. You're going to find out anger is just a cover-up for fear. I have yet to find an anger that doesn't have fear hiding beneath it, lurking. Fear is always lurking. Anger gives me the illusion of power and control. When I threw that little dog against that dresser, by God, teach her not to be on the bed again. Yeah, I would say today on reflection, I may have overreacted. You know what I tell myself? I can handle it. We have any other I can handle it people here today? I can handle it. I say I can handle it before I even think about it. Because I don't want help. That's my worst character defect today. I don't want help. I don't want you to know I need help. That feels like a weakness. Turns out, I need help. Once I have made a decision, admitted the desire to seek help from the God of my understanding. By the way, now we're into God. If I start accepting the fact I'm not God in step two, all of a sudden my need for help got a lot bigger. I'm not so self-reliant anymore that I stand in the way of my own need for help. I accept the fact I do not yet know how, when, or what this help will be. See, step three is a big generality. I'm making a decision to learn how to seek the help to find emotional sobriety and move along the path to my spiritual awakening. Step three is not step six and seven. I do not turn my will and my life over to God in step three. I repeat, I do not turn my will and my life over to the care of God in step three. I learn how in step four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. I learn how to turn my will and my life over to the care of God in step four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to admit a desire in step three to learn how. I overloaded step three for years. I tried to make this a four-step program, 1, 2, 3, 12. I really did. I didn't know I was doing that, but that's what I did. Craig W. was on here. Not too long ago, I had a situation where a person became violently angry with me, and I really did not feel that I had done anything wrong to either stimulate or deserve this anger. And I made a step three decision the night this happened and talked to my friend Craig the next morning and went through it, talked to my wife about it. She was with me at the time, so she could pretty well verify my memory of what happened and what didn't happen. And it was very painful, very emotionally painful for me. A very deep friendship. I was surprised, I was shocked, I was sad, and I was definitely angry. And my first response, thank God I didn't do it that night, but I really did start thinking about ways to retaliate and get revenge. But I made a decision. I admitted a desire not to act on those first emotions, not to react based on my emotions at the time of the incident. Now, that may sound normal to you. That may sound, well, of course you did. You're not in second grade anymore. Let me tell you something. It was a big victory for me. Not doing is an action. Not acting on a powerful, violent emotion is an action. Most of my recovery, it turns out, is about not doing something I used to do before anything else I do. And thank God I'm in a relationship with my good friend Craig, my sponsor, and I could trust calling him and laying it out. Think about what we celebrate going through recovery all the time. We celebrate the fact that we had become able to stop doing something we were never able to stop doing before. And this happens daily if I'm paying attention, if I'm living to the best of my ability in my spiritual awakening and trying to have some degree of emotional sobriety. I celebrate every day stuff I don't do that I used to do. All right, those were the A's, the admits, 1, 2, and 3. I think we'll keep, can we keep moving, Patricia, do you think?
I think that's a good idea.
Keep moving?
Yeah, do you have any next spot that you know you want to take a break?
Yeah, it'll be about 15 minutes.
Okay, great. So people, break in 15 minutes. Hang in.
Is that what this feels like, hanging in? I love you. Step four. Now look what happens here. I made a decision in step three to get some help, to learn how to get some help. I don't even know what I need help with yet. I think I know what I need help with. I mean, it's kind of like what the doctor said in his opinion, restless, irritable discontent. I want to get past living constant restless, irritable discontent. So looking at it from an emotional sobriety standpoint, here's the way I worded step four for today. Use the step four instructions and the outline, and in my case, the AA Big Book, to identify my real emotions of anger and resentment. Keep in mind, resentment's just anger in the past tense. Resentment is anger in the past tense. Anger is, I'm not getting my way right now. Resentment is, I didn't get my way back then. And of course, I've had a chance to bake that in the oven of my self-control, self-pity, and self-worship. So resentment does not get weaker over time. It grows like an angel food cake. Lord have mercy. I use the step four inventory instructions and outline in the Big Book to identify my real emotions of anger, resentment, fear, unhappiness, and sadness. And you'll find those instructions on pages 64 to 71, 64 to 71 of the Big Book. Here's a key sentence from page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. I didn't believe that for a long time, but I have come to believe resentment has no good upside. In the 12 and 12 on page 42, he says, nearly every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case of misdirected instinct. I could read misdirected, I could also say excessive. All of these are God-given. It's natural to have a sexual instinct, among other reasons, for propagation. For intimate comfort, it's perfectly natural. It's natural to have a material security instinct. You want to feel safe in your physical place, in your physical person. You want to have a safe place today, and you want to feel like you're going to be safe tomorrow. It's normal to have a desire for emotional security, the attention of other people, the companionship of other people, the encouragement of other people, just the presence of other people. So many people have experienced a lack of or a lessening of emotional security because of our so-called social distancing in the last 6 months. People keep wondering why they're feeling bad about that. We are made to be with other people. It's not a defect. It's the way God made us. We are made to be with other people. Those are normal, natural, primitive, God-given. I do it too much. I want too much, too much, too much. Too often, too often, too often. And I don't care who's standing in my way to get them. When I began making page 65 of the Big Book, first three columns are on page 65 of the Big Book of the four-column inventory. We'll get to column four on page 67 in a minute. And no, I'm not going to do a whole four-step today, but I want to do a little survey. Column one is a masterpiece. The first inventory we do in the Big Book is the resentment inventory, and you're going to see they're in order for a reason. Column one of the Big Book, Resentment Inventory, is a list of the people, organizations, institutions, and beliefs that I resent. Most newcomers need the word resent translated. I tell them, column one is everything and everybody that ever ticked you off. I've never met a newcomer who can't make that list in a heartbeat. They've been waiting for years for someone to ask them about them. Because column one is about them. Finally, the newcomer says, someone's willing to listen. And so it's fun to make column one. I'm making a list of all the people, organization, institution, beliefs that have ever ticked me off going all the way back to childhood. Some of you had heard me talk about a resentment on my second inventory. It was Janet Kay from second grade, whose father had the unmitigated gall to take a transfer from St. Louis to New Mexico and took the first love of my life away from me. What are you, second grade, 8 years old? It's on an inventory in my 40s. I don't let go very often. And then I moved to column two, what they did. Now I get to add to the them in column one, but what they did to me. Pretty soon, I'm thinking, finally, these resentments are justified, I'm thinking. Well, then I get to column three. This is where we need help of a sponsor. For sure. Because column three says, how did it make me feel? How did it affect me? Column three begins an emotional sobriety inventory. In effect, that's what column three is in the big book on page 65. Fear is mentioned on every other example in the book. Column three becomes more difficult. I did not know. I did not have any feeling except anger. I did not identify or recognize or admit any emotion when I got here except anger. I was so embarrassed about being disappointed and being embarrassed in grade school that I developed sarcasm and a hard shell. I would never admit those feelings that made me feel vulnerable. By the time I was 10 years old, if I wanted something, I worked like hell to get it, but I did not let you know I wanted it because I didn't want the embarrassment and the shame and the disappointment if I didn't get it, and I didn't want you to know how much I wanted it. I did not see that in my first inventory, but did enough inventories where I went way back and found out disappointment and embarrassment, fear of, pain of, two of my biggest drivers way into adulthood, way into recovery. Those are emotions. My God, Confucius identified him 400 BC. It's not new news, but it was new news to me. Column three, how did it affect me? In the beginning, I was completely stumped. I only knew anger. I knew nothing else. And I didn't know it then, but I was encountering my lack of emotional sobriety. And then later in the fear inventory and the sexual conduct inventory, more emotional immaturity and insecurity came out. And I began, those first few inventories, you know, I moved after 2 years, got a second sponsor, moved after 2 years, got a third sponsor, moved after 4 years to St. Louis, got a fourth sponsor, went back to Omaha, got a fifth sponsor, went to Florida. I've had seven sponsors in these years, and I've done an inventory with everyone, more than one with some. It took a while before the fear and sexual conduct inventories got comfortable for me. I did them anyway. But it took a while before they got comfortable. But as uncomfortable as they were and as vulnerable they made me feel, I did them as fearlessly and thoroughly as I could at the time because I was in the process of identifying what my emotions really are, and I didn't even know I was doing that. But if I worked that inventory like it says in the book, if I worked that inventory the way it says in the book, column one, them. Column two, what them did. Column three, start to get my sponsor to help me dig down and see what it really affected emotionally. And then column four on page 67, what part I played in it. Notice the spotlight. The spotlight in step one is on them. I came in here blaming them, including God. By the time I get to column four of the resentment inventory, the spotlight is on me. And let me tell you why that's good news, even though it's painful at the time. I can't change them. AA, Al-Anon, whoever, wherever, whatever you are, I can't change them. If I'm going to base my serenity, my peace of mind, my spiritual awakening and my emotional sobriety on them changing, I'm screwed. The good news in recovery going forward from column 4 of the resentment, fear, and sexual conduct inventories, the good news going forward in recovery is God and you are going to help me change or be changed. You're going to help me change. We should never take that for granted. It's a major misunderstanding of a lot of newcomers in recovery today, because we don't know how much we need to be changed. I don't know for sure how much I still need to be changed today. I just know that I do, because I'm broken, I'm human, I'm not perfect. I concede, I don't argue at all. Yeah, there's more change ahead. There's more improvement possible. I was 9 years sober, living back in St. Louis. My sponsor's name was Woody P. Tina and I went to the convention, the old granddad down Hot Springs, Arkansas for the, I think it was in July, with Mayor Pearl and JD, a bunch of our Arkansas friends. We had a wonderful weekend. Came back home Sunday afternoon, went to bed, had big job to go to work Monday morning. I got up at 2 a.m, went to the kitchen table and wrote a fear inventory. Did not know I was going to do it. Did not have a fear inventory on my mind that weekend. But God somehow directed me to go to that kitchen table and write a fear inventory. So I did. Took it with me to work, called Woody at noon, said, let me tell you what happened. He laughed. He says, guess what I did yesterday? He said, he's a little older than me at the time. Well, he would still be older than me, wouldn't he? Just want to know if you're paying attention there, people. He said, I got up from my nap yesterday. God told me to write a fear inventory. We decided to get together for lunch Tuesday. This was kind of we were not against doing fear inventories, but neither one of us had planned to do a fear inventory. We got together for lunch Tuesday. And in the process of sharing our fear inventories, we both found out about some deep emotional baggage that we were carrying. I don't remember today exactly what it was, but I do remember that from that inventory, from that Tuesday forward, my whole recovery changed. I believe the resentment inventory comes first in the big book because it's the thing that dominates my emotions when I get here. I only felt anger when I got here. I only knew anger when I got here. And resentment is just the past accumulation of everything I've been angry about since I was 3 years old. I say three because I was an only child for 3 years, and then my brother was born. I love my brother. May he rest in peace. He died a couple of years ago. But I think most first kids get a resentment when the second one's born, because they're no longer the only star. King baby. I think we need to get resentments and angers enough out of the way to begin to even experience the fear. The fear has to bubble up. And when I start to peel away the resentment and anger, some of the fear bubbles up. It's been there all along. It's been driving me and affecting me and controlling me. I've been a victim of my buried fear. I think what happened in the summer of 1990 with Woody was enough fear was released to free me of a huge chunk of the bondage of self. I think I was answering. I think I was receiving an answer to the step 3 prayer. But I started praying in 1981. We don't know. Page 164 in the big book says, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. It does not say reveal. It says, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. I believe I had a disclosure with Woody because I was willing to take the action that I was led to take at 2 o'clock on a Monday morning on that kitchen table and write a fear inventory I had not planned, did not know I needed, and was not defiant enough to resist it, thank God. I definitely began to identify my real emotions by that time in recovery. And in the fifth step, what do? We admit to God. We admit to myself and my sponsor, or trusted spiritual advisor, the exact nature of my wrongs. You know what? Let's take that 5-minute break before I go any further with step five, because 5, 6, and 7 are going to kind of run together here. Can we take that 5-minute break?
Let's do it.
I'll be happy to answer any questions anybody has. I don't need a break, but you may.
Yeah, everybody can have that, like their bio break, or get up and stretch, wiggle, move.